Part 2. That night and the following morning passed slowly for me because of my impatience. Finally, it was time to meet Talbot. I went quickly to his house. "Good afternoon. I've come to see Mr. Talbot," I said to the servant who opened the door. "Mr. Talbot isn't here," said the servant. "That's impossible," I exclaimed. "He told me to come today at 1 o'clock. "Mr. Talbot left immediately after breakfast and told me he'd return in a week," said the servant. I was so angry that I couldn't say another word. Talbot had obviously forgotten our appointment, and now I had no way of meeting Madame Leland. I walked down the street, hoping to meet someone who knew her well enough to introduce me formally to her. The friends I met on the way had all heard of her, but as Madame Leland had arrived in the city only a few weeks before, none of them felt they knew her well enough to make such an introduction. While I stood talking to a group of friends, an open carriage passed us. "There she is," cried one of my friends. "She's as beautiful as an angel." I looked and saw Madame Leland in the carriage together with the younger woman who had been with her in the theater. "Madame Leland's companion is also very attractive," said another friend. "Yes, she looks better than she did when I saw her in Paris 5 years ago," said the third. Then, turning to me, he said, "She's still a beautiful woman, don't you think, Froissart? Simpson, I mean?" "Yes, but her companion is much more beautiful," I exclaimed. "There's no comparison." As the carriage slowly passed us, Madame Leland recognized me and gave me a beautiful smile. I was filled with happiness. Every day I went to Talbot's house to see if he had returned. But every day I received the same answer to my question. Talbot hadn't come home yet. As I had no way of being introduced to Madame Leland until Talbot returned, I spent my time going to all the places where I thought I might see her. This continued for 2 weeks. Talbot still didn't return. Finally, I saw Madame Leland in the same theater as before, and we exchanged looks. I knew that Madame Leland lived in Paris, and I began to be afraid that she might return there before I had had a chance to tell her of my love. Because my future happiness was in danger, I made a desperate decision. I followed her home at the end of the play and wrote down her address. The next morning, I wrote her a letter revealing my love for her. I added that, because of her behavior, I was sure that she loved me too, and I was afraid that she might leave the city before I had the opportunity of a formal introduction. I even asked her to marry me. It seemed to me that a century passed until I received her answer, but in fact, it arrived a day later. "Mr. Simpson," she wrote in English, with some charming mistakes, "forgive me for not being able to write well in English. I haven't had the opportunity to study the language yet. But you have guessed the truth. Do I need to say more? I think I've already said too much. Eugenie Leland." In my happiness, I kissed this letter repeatedly. But Talbot still hadn't returned to the city. Finally, I wrote him a letter explaining how much I was suffering. He wrote back saying that he still had some important business to finish, but that he would soon be home. He advised me to be patient and to occupy myself with other things. This letter made me very angry. What kind of a friend was he? If he couldn't return immediately, why hadn't he also sent a letter of introduction, which would have made it possible for me to meet Madame Leland? So I wrote to him again, imploring him to send me such a letter. My letter was returned. On it was a message from Talbot's servant, saying that he had now gone to be with his master, that they would be travelling and couldn't receive letters anymore. I decided that I couldn't wait any longer and that I had to find another way of meeting my love. Since I received her letter, I had often watched her house, so I knew that in the early evening she went for a short walk in a little park near her house. At these times, she only had one servant with her. The next evening, I waited for her in the park. In order to fool the servant, I said good evening to her, as if we knew each other well. She at once gave me one of her lovely small hands. The servant left us alone, and we could finally talk about our love for each other. Madame Lalanne didn't speak English very well, so we had to speak in French, but this wasn't a problem for me. With all my passion and eloquence, I implored her to marry me immediately. She smiled and told me to have a little patience. It wouldn't be correct to marry so quickly, she explained, because everyone knows that we only met recently. Also, you don't know enough about me to really be in love with me. What you feel is a fantasy, or the temporary love of a young man, and it won't be permanent. I had an answer for every one of her doubts. There are always problems in love and life, I said, so people should make decisions quickly, because things may be ruined if they wait too long. My words seemed to convince her a little, but she found another obstacle to our love. Do you know that there's quite a big difference in age between us? She asked. It's certainly very common for husbands to be much older than their wives, but in our case, it's just the opposite. I'm older than you. Did you know that? I was enchanted by the dignity and truthfulness with which she told me this. My dearest Eugenie, I said, I know that you're older than me, but that isn't important when two people are in love. It's true that I'm only 21 years old, and you must be about... I was silent for a moment, thinking that Eugenie would now tell me her age, but she didn't. Instead, she put her hand into her pocket and seemed to be looking for something there. Suddenly, a small picture fell to the ground. I took it and gave it to her. Keep it, she said with a beautiful smile. I want you to have it. Also, on the back of the picture, you may find the information you want. It's getting dark now, but you can examine it tomorrow morning. Now I would like to invite you to come to my house. I'm having a musical evening with some friends, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. She took my arm, and I walked home with her. Her house was very large, and everything in it was expensive and beautiful. There was very little light in the house, because only a few lamps were lit. This caused everything to be in shadow and gave the place an atmosphere which I enjoyed. This was definitely one of the best evenings I've ever spent in my entire life. The musicians played beautifully, and all the singers were very talented. After some time, people began shouting, Madame Lalande, and she immediately got up and went to the piano. Her young companion from the opera went with her. She then sang a few songs so well that the entire audience was very enthusiastic. I must say that I've heard many singers in many places, but Eugenie was really special. She not only had a marvelous voice, but she also sang with such expression and sentiment that I was very moved. When she came back and sat down next to me, I told her enthusiastically how much I had enjoyed her singing. We now had a long, serious conversation. I told her all about my childhood and younger years. I didn't want to hide anything from her. I told her about the illnesses I had had and about the times when I hadn't behaved well. Finally, I told her the secrets which, until now, I had hidden from everyone. The fact that my eyes were weak and that I couldn't see very clearly. I wouldn't have known that you had such a problem if you hadn't told me, Eugenie said with a laugh. Now tell me, do you remember these? From her pocket, she took a small pair of expensive opera glasses, which I recognized immediately. These were the glasses through which she had looked at me on the evening I first saw her. Of course I remember, I answered and kissed her hand. You have asked me to do you a big favor, Eugenie continued. You have asked me to marry you immediately. I now feel that I can ask you for a small favor in exchange. I'll do anything you want, I exclaimed. I want you to stop hiding the fact that you can't see well, Eugenie said. These opera glasses can be used as spectacles, and I want you to start wearing them all the time. I'm worried that with your bad vision, you may get yourself into some unpleasant situations. I was very confused by this request, but how could I refuse it? Eugenie was asking me to sacrifice something, but she was giving me so much more. She was giving me herself. Tomorrow morning, when you become my wife, I'll put these spectacles on my nose and I'll never take them off, I promised happily. We now made plans for our marriage, which we agreed would take place the next day. Talbot had finally returned to the city, and he would help us organize everything. Go to him at once and borrow a carriage from him, Eugenie told me. The musical evening will end at 2 o'clock in the morning. Wait for me then, in front of my house, with Talbot. We'll go immediately to the house of a minister who I've already spoken to. He'll marry us, and then we'll leave on a long voyage. That way, we won't have to hear what everyone will say about our sudden marriage. After making all these plans, I left for Talbot's house. On the way, I couldn't resist looking at the small picture that Eugenie had given me. I used the opera glasses so that I could see it clearly. The face I saw was beautiful in every detail, as I had known it would be. On the back of the picture were written the words, Eugenie Leland, aged 27 years and 7 months. Talbot was at home and, although he was surprised at our plans, he helped us to do what we had decided. Everything went well, and a little after 2 o'clock in the morning, the former Madame Leland was already Mrs. Simpson, and we were on our way out of the city to begin our married life. As we had been awake all night, Talbot advised us to stop at a small village about 10 kilometers from the city to have breakfast and rest before continuing our journey. In the early hours of the morning, our carriage arrived at a small hotel in the village. As we walked into the hotel, the thought occurred to me that this would be the first time that I had seen my wife in the light of day. Just then, Eugenie took my hand. "And now, my dear," she said, "now that we are married, you must keep your promise. You must put on the spectacles and wear them all the time." "Of course, my beautiful Eugenie," I said, and put on the spectacles which I had been carrying in my pocket. But after looking through them for a minute, I exclaimed, "Something is wrong with these spectacles." I took them off, cleaned them, and then put them on again. When I looked through them at new Mrs. Simpson, I realized nothing was wrong with the spectacles, but a lot was wrong with her. What a terrible sight I saw! There was artificial red colouring on Eugenie's cheeks, and her face was full of wrinkles. And what had happened to her teeth? I threw the spectacles on the floor and looked at my new wife in horror. I couldn't speak because of my shock and anger. "What's the matter, my dear? Why are you looking at me like that?" asked Eugenie in surprise. "You're an evil old witch," I shouted at her. "Old? I'm not a day more than 82, she said sweetly. 82? I shouted, almost falling down with shock. "According to the picture you gave me, you're 27. "Yes, but the picture was painted 55 years ago," Eugenie explained. "When I married my second husband, Monsieur Leland, I had the portrait painted for my daughter by my first husband, Monsieur Moissart." "Moissart?" I exclaimed. "Yes, Moissart," replied Eugenie angrily. "And what exactly do you know about Monsieur Moissart?" "I don't know anything about him, you old witch, but a long time ago I had an ancestor with the same name," I answered. "The same name, you say? Well, it's a good name, so don't say anything against it," Eugenie continued. "And my daughter married a Monsieur of Moissart, and that's a very respectable name too." "Moissart and Voissart?" I exclaimed. My head was beginning to turn. "What does this mean?" "What does it mean?" she repeated. "It means what I said. And incidentally, my granddaughter married a Croissart, and my great-granddaughter married a Froissart. So, have you got anything to say about all these names? Froissart, I must say, was an idiot. He left France and came to America. I understand that he had a son, a very stupid son, named Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart. I've never met him. By now Eugenie was absolutely furious. She shouted and looked at me angrily, and finally pulled her hat from her head, and with it an enormous black wig of beautiful black hair. She threw it to the floor and jumped on it. I sat down slowly on a chair and looked at Eugenie in horror for a few moments. Then I said slowly, "But I'm Napoleon Bonaparte Froissart. I've married my own great-great-grandmother." To my enormous surprise, Eugenie began to laugh. I looked at her incredulously. "Why are you laughing?" I asked. "This isn't funny. It's a tragedy." Eugenie then told me what had really happened. She really was my great-great-grandmother. In her youth, she had been beautiful, and even at 82, with the help of her false hair, she was still considered an attractive woman. She had come to America especially to meet me. She was a very rich widow with no children, and she wanted to leave me all her money. She had arrived with a beautiful young relative of her second husband's, a Madame Stephanie Lalande. On that first evening at the opera, she had seen me looking at her and had observed that I looked like her family. She had asked the man who was with her about me, and he had told her who I was. That was why she had looked at me through her opera glasses. When I continued looking at her, she had been sure that I knew who she was. When I asked Talbot so enthusiastically who the unknown lady was, he was sure that I meant the younger beauty, and he told me, in perfect truth, that she was the celebrated widow Madame Lalande. The morning after the opera, in the street, Eugenie had met Talbot, whom she had known from Paris. Naturally, they began to talk about me, and Talbot explained to her that I couldn't see well. I had thought that this was my secret, but it appeared that all my friends knew about it. When she heard this, Eugenie understood that I hadn't known who she was, and that I had simply behaved stupidly, by paying too much attention in a public place to an unknown old woman. She decided to punish me for being so stupid, and so conspired with Talbot. That was why he had left the city, so that he wouldn't have to introduce me to her. When I asked my friends about the beautiful Madame Lalande, they had thought, of course, that I was speaking about the young widow. When Eugenie invited me to her musical evening, my objection to wearing spectacles stopped me from discovering her real age. When people asked Madame Lalande to sing, they meant Stephanie, who was known to have a marvelous voice. Eugenie simply stood up and went to the piano with her in order to fool me, but it was Stephanie who sang. Because of my bad vision, I hadn't seen the truth. Eugenie then gave me the spectacles in order to teach me a lesson I would never forget. The minister who had married us was a friend of Talbot's, and not a minister at all. He also drove us in our carriage to the hotel, with Talbot sitting beside him, and both of them enjoyed themselves watching the end of our drama. But my story has a happy ending. Although I am not the husband of my great-great-grandmother, I am the husband of Stephanie Lalande. Eugenie organized the match and will also leave me all her money when she dies, if she ever does. In conclusion, I will never write a love letter to anyone again, and I will also never, never wear spectacles.